Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 112 countries worldwide over the Internet. If you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on Here's the Bad News when we come back. In Job 38, verse 24, we read a scientific question. That's right, a scientific question in the Bible. It says, by what way is it that the light is parted? Or if we paraphrased it, it would tell us, by what way or technique is the light apportioned or separated? Now imagine asking that question 4,000 years ago. Today, of course, it's a simple question, a simple one to answer. And a student simply says, well, by passing it through the prism of the spectroscope. But who could have known anything about a spectroscope 4,000 years ago back in Job's day? Now, when we heat a metal red hot, or we heat any substance until it's incandescent, it gives forth rays of light. These rays, after passing through the prism of the spectroscope, divide themselves on a graph according to the content of the matter that sent them forth. So when a ray of light reaches us from some far-flung star out in the universe, we need only to pass that light ray through the spectroscope to see the composition of the star and the proportion of each of its ingredients. This division of light rays is always constant, and it doesn't vary in the least particular, so that we can always rely upon the results. Spectroscopic analysis is an exact science, and this is the manner by which the light is apportioned. This places us, though, in a quandary, because either Job knew that, or there is a supernatural wisdom being revealed here. And that's just one more of the many examples of science in the Bible. And it's one more of our many lessons here on the Mosaic Law School that we teach here twice a year in Isabella, Missouri. If you'd like more information, why don't you call and order our free general law CD package. It's a 4-hour commentary on the law in general. Remember, it's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining. Best of all, it's free. You can call right now and ask for one. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to our website. It's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Just click on the email and send us an email request for that free general law CD package. Again, georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, last time I introduced you to Here's the Bad News, I told you that the Royal Bank of Scotland has issued an alert to all of their clients, and it says, get ready in 90 days. We're expecting an implosion in the world's stock markets. And so if you're still invested in stocks, you can take it from the Royal Bank of Scotland. That's an insider bank, by the way, that they're expecting the collapse of the last item, the last thing here in the scenario, as Bob Chapman pointed out last time. The first Great Depression that we're talking about, the 1930s, the stock market was the first item to break. In the depression of the 21st century, it's going to be the last item. Everything else is broken and gone upside down. And the stock markets have been held up by the Plunge Protection Team, and that's the PPT, which was established by President Reagan right after the last meltdown in 1987. They said, we got to have a way to deal with it. Henry Paulson now is going to Congress, and he's saying, well, we got to have extraordinary powers to deal with this economic crisis. Now, the truth be known, the last thing that Congress should do is to give the Federal Reserve more extraordinary powers to deal with the upcoming crisis. And we'd all be better served if the government would butt out, let the marketplace seek its equilibrium, wherever that may be, and we would all come out of it better. You can rest assured that is not going to happen. Rest assured that the Congress and the powers that be will never let the marketplace decide market conditions or give a market answer. It's going to be a political solution. It's going to be with the government meddling and interfering in the marketplace. So I plugged that one into my memory bank, and I said, well, okay, that's what they did the last time. And it screwed everything up royally, and we had a 9-year depression. They will do the same thing again, and this year, instead of a 9-year depression, it'll probably be an 18-year depression. I don't know how long it's going to be, and I don't know how severe it's going to be. Remember, a depression now is something that happens when you lose your job. It's a recession when somebody else over here loses his job. Now, when you lose your job, then you're going to recognize depression because now that affects you. And being able to survive, being able to make ends meet is going to be a challenge. Now, most of the people in the world are already faced with that. The Americans do not know what that's all about. And I mean all of you Americans that are out there on welfare and food stamps and welfare and so on. You haven't reached the bottom yet. Hell, you're not even close. But you're on your way to the bottom. And when you get to the bottom, most of you are going to kill yourselves. You're going to jump out of buildings and commit suicide. And you won't know how to deal with it. And that's because psychologically you're not prepared for it. And I mentioned that to you last time. In my last report, I said, you know, psychologically, most people cannot read the International Forecaster because it's too depressing. Now, I read a lot of depressing newsletters, and I have a lot of depressing information that comes across my desk, but I don't go out and commit suicide. I act upon it. That's what I do. I take a look at it and say, what kind of an opportunity is embedded here? Depression is coming. How do I turn that around to my advantage? Now, I'm not sitting here saying to you that I'm tickled to death that a Great Depression is coming and you're going to lose your house so that I can take your house away from you for 10 cents on the dollar. I'm not suggesting that. But when your house goes on the auction block at 10 cents on the dollar, you're going to really be upset. Now, I've got to tell you a little story here about Frank Rocha. Now, old Frank, in 1955, had 650 tons of hay in his barn. 650 tons. And the neighbor next door didn't have any hay at all. He got his hay just in time delivery from Tracy, California on a truck. He was in a grade A business. Now, the rule of thumb was you needed 3 acres of land for each cow that you hit. 3 acres for each cow. And so, you know, if you had 300 acres of land, you'd have 100 cows. And you'd pasture those cows on 200 acres, and you'd save 100 acres and make hay with it to carry you through the winter. And this is the cycle that goes on and on and on. Okay, now, the neighbor next door, he had 300 acres, but he put on 300 cows. And he bought all of his hay from Tracy, California, milked all of his cows grade A. Now, he's got no hay at all, no reserve whatsoever. But then he doesn't need any reserve. He's got just-in-time delivery. He's got Yancey Feed Company, you know. He's got Eureka Feed and Seed, you know. I mean, hell, he just calls him on the phone, says, send me another truckload of hay, and he's got another 20 tons, you know, 20 tons of hay coming in next week, next Wednesday, next Thursday, so... And so they'd unload that hay, you know, he had a little barn over there, and unload the hay in the barn, and he'd feed that hay out, and he's feeding his cows, everything's going fine. Well, in December of 1955, a flood comes up. Flood's only there for 3 days, and he's getting by. But all of a sudden, this flood knocks out all the bridges, and all of a sudden, there's no hay coming into Humboldt County. None. Zero. In fact, the one road that's open, which is the old county road, you know, that went down Highway 1, you know, to Shoulder Cove, and on down to Fort Bragg, you know, was all closed, and they wouldn't let any trucks come through there except food and emergency vehicles. until they could get some of these bridges put back in. So they called in the Army Corps of Engineers, and they put in some bridges, you know, those emergency. The Army's really spectacular. You knock a bridge out, and they just come in and put another one in overnight. So that they, once the rivers went down, you know, they came up and put some bridges across the low spots and got us back into business. But meanwhile, for about a month or two, there's no hay coming in. So the neighbor comes over to Frank. And he said, Frank, I need to buy some hay from you. I'm 15 years old, and Frank said, well, I'm sorry, Charlie, but I don't have any hay to sell. We were standing in the barn. Now, Frank's barn was full of hay. Biggest barn in the valley, 210 feet high. It's, 210 feet long, about 70 feet high, 210 feet long. Full of hay, 650 tons. Frank says, I ain't got no hay to sell. And the guy says, Frank, you've got hay right there. And this is an emergency, and I need it. And I'll pay you back. And Frank said, well, that's all well and good. And I'm sure you would. Sure you will. But he said, I'm sorry, but I don't have any hay to sell. Now, you'd think that a good comment. Frank was not a communist. He was an immigrant from Portugal. Didn't understand, you know, sharing and sharing alike. I guess evidently he was a kid raised, you know, without Barney and Sesame Street, and he didn't know how to share his toys, and he sure as hell didn't know how to share his hay. And so the guy was just incensed. He was irate. He was mad as hell. He stormed out of the barn, and I said, well, Mr. See, I was 15 years old. I'd already been raised as a communist. I knew about share and share alike and share your toys. And I asked Mr. Rocha, I said, excuse me, Mr. Rocha, but, you know, the neighbor doesn't have any hay, and your barn is full of hay. In fact, Mr. Rocha, you told me that you've got enough hay there for 3 years. And he said, yeah, that's right. But I don't have any hay to sell. But it's true, I've got enough hay here to feed my cows for 3 years, but I don't have any hay to sell to the neighbor, and he don't have any cows to feed his hay next week. And so I said, well, but, sir, why are you doing that to your neighbor? And he said, well, let me explain this to you, son. So he said, look out the barn window here, and he said, can you see all of that brown silt on our field? I said, yes, sir. I said, he said to me, he said, that means that there will not be any grass this year. See, at age 15, I did not understand what silt in the field meant. I don't know. I'm from the city. See, I don't know. So for all of you city people out there, when you're looking up here in the Midwest and you see all that flood water and all that silt out there on those crops, that means there's going to be no harvest. Zero harvest. That's bad news. None. And being from the city, I didn't understand that because I always got my food out of the Purity and Safeway store. This farmer got his food out of the cow as he was milking her in the barn. After the cow had been down in the field eating the green grass. Boys and girls, cows have to eat green grass in order for you to get milk out of the cow in the barn so that the creamery truck can pick up the milk cans and take them off to the creamery and put it in those shiny new bottles and deliver it to your doorstep. It's the way that cycle works. Most people don't know that, don't understand that. And so, Mr. Roach explained to me that instead of feeding the cows green grass this coming year, we're going to be feeding those cows hay. And then we're going to be down there working night and day, farming as much as we can. 24 hours a day, he said. When this thing dries up, we're going to be down there 24 hours a day, night and day, farming, planting seed to grow grass year after next. So I got to have enough hay to carry my cows through this winter, then I got to have enough hay to carry them all through next year and then all through next winter because there isn't going to be any hay crop next year. None. Zero. Zilch. No hay crop. I'm 15 years old. I'm a communist. I don't understand all that I'm hearing, but I would as time progressed along. Now, the neighbor next door, not having any hay, had to take his cows to the sale barn and sell them. And here are his good milk cows. Yeah, his good milk cows. I mean, top of the line milk cows. He's got to sell a lot of milk cows. He hasn't got anything to feed them. What the hell are you going to do them? Mr. Rocha goes to the sale barn, and he sees these real neat, nice cows coming through the sale barn, so he buys them. Some of those cows that he bought were the neighbor's cows. Can you imagine how incensed the neighbor was? Taking advantage, as Frank Rocha did, who not only wouldn't sell him any hay to feed his cows, now he goes to the sale barn and he's buying all of these top-notch cows because Frank's got some hay to feed them. Hey, talk about a capitalist taking advantage of a guy when he's down, huh? Now, you know, to the average run-of-the-mill communist, he'd say, well, that Mr. Roach is really a bad man. But looking at it pragmatically, you know, everybody had a choice to make. Frank chose to put hay in the barn. The neighbor chose to buy his hay from far, far away and run the risk that there might be a flood that would interfere with the supply. It was a choice that everybody had to make, and everybody made the choice. When the game was finally played out, the neighbor lost and Frank won. And that's the way life is. See, oftentimes we make choices, and then when we lose, we don't want to lose, and so then we say, well, we want somebody to come in here and give us overs. Overs. You ever heard of that? Overs. That's where a bunch of little boys are playing marbles, and to determine who's going to get the first shot at the pool of marbles inside the ring, we lag. And the guy whose marble gets the closest to the line gets to go first, and the guy that's the next closest goes second, and third closest, and so on. And that determines the order by which we get to shoot. That's when you're a marble player, see? And so sometimes a kid would lag, and then when his marble was a long ways from the line, too far over or too close, he'd say, "Overs!" As if he should have two chances, and the rest of us get one. So when things don't work out, we all want to say overs. Well, boys and girls, out here in the real world, there's no overs. You either made the decision correctly when you made it, or you didn't. As my old granny used to say, you made your bed, sweetheart, now go sleep in it. Now, that's the way life is. And then I didn't make it that way. I'm just here as a reporter telling you that that's the way it is. Now, I'm going to give you a report here from the privateer. Last time I gave you a report from the international forecaster, and I said, well, now that's pretty bad news. Well, now the privateer comes from Australia. It's put out by a fellow by the name of Buckler. Buckler. William A.M. Buckler. And if you'd like to tune into them, it's www.the-privateer.com. Got that? That's www.the-privateer.com. Or if you want to send him an email, send it to capt@the-privateer.com. If you want to call him, the number is 617-5471-1960. And again, that phone number in Queensland, Australia is 617-5471-1960. All right, here's the privateer, Global Report. And since our last issue, gold has entered the world's geostrategic center. Iran has acted with speed and moved its foreign exchange from European banks in anticipation that these Iranian reserves would be frozen under a stiffer regime of the U.S.-led sanctions. Iran has announced this publicly. Pause. Remember the last time when they seized all those hostages over in Iran back in the Jimmy Carter years? So America then, in retaliation, seized all of Iran's assets in our banks over here around the world. Now, the Iranians, dummies that they are, learned from their mistake. And so now, before the great collapse comes, before the Americans attack Iran, they've pulled all of their reserves out of all the banks around the world and converted it to gold, which is about the same as sticking their big middle finger right up under your nose. It's called giving them the flag. So the Iranians have now given President Bush the finger and said, stick this where there's no daylight, Mr. President. Now, based on a decision made by a government working group, Iran has switched to genuine assets like gold and shares. We have decreased our foreign currency holdings in international banks, so said Iran's Deputy Foreign Minister for Economic Affairs, Mohsen Telli, on June 9th. I'm going to emphasize this is still June as I speak. June 9th. 2 weeks ago. Now, gold is the global monetary nuclear bomb. Remember last time I said, now, 90 days from now, you can expect the stock markets to crash. I got that from the Royal Bank of Scotland, you know, so don't cite George Gordon here. You cite the Royal Bank of Scotland, the International Monetary Fund, the International Forecaster, the Privateer, and David Mon. Those are the sources. Now, why are these stock markets going to crash? Okay, boys and girls, and that's because gold has now become geostrategic. Now, you haven't heard anything about gold. You don't know much about it. You don't hear about it on the nightly business report. You didn't hear about it from Katie Couric or Brian Williams or Charlie Gibson. And you're probably not going to hear much about it from anybody else, but you'll hear about it from the privateer and from me and others. Now, gold is very, very important in the world. It trades at the rate of $10 billion a day on the London Metals Exchange. You'd think something that important in the material world would be reported on, but you see, you're not supposed to know anything about gold. And so that's why you're kept in the dark. And so I thought I'd throw a little light on it. Gold is the global monetary nuclear bomb. It is one thing for Iran to stop selling its oil in U.S. dollars, in the process displacing the U.S. dollar from this vital part of the commodities markets. But it is another thing totally for Iran to move to change parts of its foreign exchange reserves from U.S. dollars into gold. See, it was bad enough when they stopped using dollars. It's even worse now that they're using gold. And that's because the U.S. dollar is being replaced by gold. And let me assure you, boys and girls, the United States of America cannot sit still while this is going on. Now, you remember here, I told you in 2005 that war with Iran is inevitable. Now, I'm not the only guy that funked that up. I'm just here to report to you that I've been reporting to you that the United States is going to war with Iran. Now, these Iranians over here, the excuse that we're using is that they're building these nuclear weapons. Rest assured, that the United States of America does not give a rat's ass about nuclear weapons in Iran any more than we care about nuclear weapons in North Korea. But the United States of America cannot sleep. If the Iranians switch their oil sales to dollars, or from dollars to euros, or switch from dollars to gold. Now, that is absolutely intolerable. Now, we cannot go to war against Iran or anybody else saying that, listen, we don't like their economic policies. And hell, even Americans wouldn't buy them. I mean, we Americans will buy just about anything. You know, gold mines in the Pacific Trench. But, you know, even an American would have a hard time swallowing the idea that we should go to war against Iran because they want to get paid in gold instead of U.S. dollars. So we have to come up with an excuse. And the excuse that we've been using over the past 3 years is that the Iranians are over here making these nuclear weapons. Now, it isn't beyond the pale of things for Iran to make nuclear weapons, or that they would like to, and probably are going to. I don't deny that. But I'm telling you right now that going to war with Iran over nuclear weapons is at the bottom of the list. But going to war with Iran over their golden dollar policy is right at the top of the list. That is absolutely intolerable. We're not going to sit still for that, and you Iranians better wake up to reality. You'd do a lot better making nuclear bombs than converting your oil sales to anything other than dollars, let me tell you. So just in case you thought this thing was over, nuclear weapons, you got that one incorrect. That's what the cover story is. That's the cover story. The U.S. dollar is being replaced by gold. And this move cuts right in under the U.S. dollar's global standing as the reserve, which all other nations have to hold to underpin their own national monetary systems. Gold, as far as Iran is concerned, is that alternative. Were other nations to follow in Iran's footsteps, then gold would become an official gold reserve asset in its own right. When that happens, and in time it will, the U.S. dollar will become globally displaced from its present status as the sole or main reserve currency. Geostrategically, from this point on, the United States has to declare a de facto war on gold as well as on Iran through sanctions, blockade, or outright attack to defend the dollar. Now, this is called the privateer. Now, the privateer comes out twice a month, and it's 12 pages, twice a month. Costs $180 a year Australian. 25 issues, $180 Australian, which is about $130 American, I'm informed. Well worth the money. This guy is probably the best teacher, best economics teacher in the newsletter business. And this is one of the newsletters that I recommend so highly. So, we're firing paper bullets. To find out where the U.S. currently stands in respect to launching a war on gold, the best place to go is to the most recent U.S. flow of funds report. Here it was stated that total net borrowing was expanding at an annual rate of $3 trillion over the first quarter of this year. All right, boys and girls, pause right there. The money is being increased in the United States of America at the rate of $3 trillion a year. And at the end of 2008, we're going to have $3 trillion more dollars in circulation than we did at the beginning of the year. Now, boys and girls, does that tend to make prices higher or lower? Just add $3 trillion to your money base and then ask the question, does that make your prices go higher or lower? Well, boys and girls, if you think that you can just print up pieces of paper and send them off to Saudi Arabia for barrels of oil indefinitely at the same price, 35 cents a gallon, I got news for you. It has never worked in the past, tain't working now, and it ain't likely to work in the future. And those people are going to keep raising the price of oil as you keep depreciating the price of your dollars. And as you keep printing more and more useless, worthless dollars, those people are going to take more and more useless, worthless dollars and charge you more and more for their oil. And that's because they don't want to be stolen from. They've been stolen from for a long time, and they're getting tired of it. And the Iranians are the first to bolt, and they said, well, we ain't going to sit still for this. Now, the rest of them are still standing in line because they're still sitting there wondering, what's the United States going to do with Iran? And the answer is, we're going to war with Iran. And we don't have any other choice. Now, people act irrationally when they're put up into a crisis. You know, when a crisis mode appears, and we're in a crisis mode here in America. For the rest of you people in the world, you can rest assured that the American geopolitical and strategic response is going to be totally irrational. So if you people in Europe think that we Americans over here are nuts, you're exactly correct. We are. We have reached the point of total insanity. I mean, hell, we can't whip a bunch of Arabs, you know, a bunch of camel jockeys running around in the desert in Afghanistan and Iraq. What in the hell makes you think we can take on a third bunch of those same camel jockeys and whip three of them instead of two? I mean, it's like a drunk in a bar, you know. He gets into a beef with one guy, and this one guy's got a friend, so now he's in a beef with the second guy. Now he's fighting two guys over here, so he throws beer in the face of a third one. Totally irrational. I mean, hell, you know, you got your hands full already, partner. There ain't no sense trying to drag in a third guy over here to clean your clock. So that's where America is. And so if you people around the world think that we're acting irrational today, you ain't seen nothing yet. You wait until we really go bonkers, which we're in the process of doing. And you want to remember that our president has his finger on strategic nuclear weapons. These are also known as weapons of mass destruction. This does not bode well for the world. Now, this is an enormous internal U.S. credit expansion and has to stand on one side of any U.S. war on gold. Note that an earlier stage in the development of today's credit monetary system would have required the outright printing of a similar quantity of banknotes. These would have been lent and then spent into wider circulation. Today, of course, the same thing is being done with a great deal more decorum by crediting borrowers' accounts with the same sums. And there is not a banknote in sight, even though the end result is the same. To fight a war against gold, the United States has to end its credit expansion. And if it does not, it will lose that war. But boys and girls, we cannot end our credit expansion because our economy will collapse. This is the box that we're in. So if you're an American, get ready for war with Iran. And if you're anybody else in the world, take cover. Anybody else in the world, take cover. Yeah, I got to give you a reminder here that you're listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard in more than 112 countries daily worldwide over the Internet and radio. Now, for more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, the Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. That's 8 schools and all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has our radio log schedule and archives, and that can all be accessed through the website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Remember, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order one by calling the law school and asking for it. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief. The Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. Now, these endorsements or recommendations that we give do not mean that those authors or publications that we endorse will necessarily reciprocate. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications cited here on the Law Hour and Editorial Review may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review. Now, these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine. They're mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertiser, sponsors, management, or staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. Now, if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we are reviewing the newsletter called The Privateer. I always recommend this. It's not for those of you out there that cannot take psychologically this bad news. That's why I recommended a fiction book called The Last Babylon last time. And you can get a copy of The Last Babylon from Brave New Bookstore. Brave New Bookstore is at 512. This is their phone number now. 512 is the area code. 480-2503. They're located at 1904 Guadalupe Street, Suite B. That's 1904 Guadalupe Street, Suite B, Austin, Texas, 78705. That's Austin, Texas. The zip code is 78705. You can get them on the internet at bravenewbookstore.com. Bravenewbookstore.com. They'll have a copy of The Last Babylon. Now, for those of you that are a little bolder in life, you may want to subscribe to or at least get a copy of the late June issue, number 606 of The Privateer, published by William A.M. Buckler, down in Noosa Heads, Queensland, Australia, our brothers down in Australia. 4567, Australia. I guess that's their zip code down there, 4567. Noosa Heads, Australia. The post office box is 2004. That's P.O. Box 2004. Noosa, N-O-O-S-A, Heads, Queensland, Australia, 4567. Now, Mr. Buckler goes on to say, now he's also got a little section in here on the Royal Bank of Scotland. He also reported on the Royal Bank of Scotland telling all of their clients, along with Morgan Stanley. Stock market crash, get ready for it, 3 months. And as I speak here at the end of June, that tells us July, August, September. If it doesn't collapse in the next July, August, or September, well then October, November, December would be a next good bet. Now remember, the last time this happened was in October 1929. That was the big one. We had another stock market crash in October of 1987. October of 1987. And we bailed out of that one. Fortunately, we bailed out of that one, but it's coming again. Now, here's more paper, U.S. bullets. On the other side, in any U.S. war on gold, stands gold itself. It is therefore instructive to see how the many previous wars on gold have gone. This numerical sequence displays the story of all of the past U.S. wars on gold. It started with U.S. gold at $20.67 an ounce in 1930. U.S. $35 an ounce in 1935. U.S. $42.22 an ounce in 1976. U.S. $850 an ounce in 1981. And in March of 2008, U.S. gold price $1,004. These U.S. dollar amounts show what has happened between the U.S. dollar and gold over more than 100 years. And each one of these examples shows a ratio between U.S. dollars and a troy ounce of gold. The gold ounce has remained the same. It is clear, then, that it is the value of the U.S. dollar that has changed against the weight of gold. A U.S. dollar in 2008 is worth 2 U.S. cents compared to a 1900 U.S. dollar. Little wonder that when the central bankers and or treasurers meet at their endless global summits, they are prepared to make comments about globally climbing food prices or oil prices climbing and even credit crunches, but they never, never, never mention the word gold. And that's what makes this recent Iranian move such a stark change in direction. Gold has now gone geostrategic. The June 9th announcement that Iran was switching its foreign exchange reserves into gold and out of U.S. dollars makes gold then a de facto international foreign exchange reserve. It's an alternative to the U.S. dollar. And the much larger international fact that the 15 European nations led by the ECB have previously made public statements to the effect that the gold in the ECB and in the other euro currency central banks, as well as the gold holdings in the remaining 12 European nations in the 27-member European Union, have all said that gold has to be counted as part of their reserves. So let's take a look at Europe and gold. Over the past few years, the euro has soared against the U.S. dollar, and the U.S. dollar index fell from 121.2 in July of 2001 at its peak to a low so far of 71 in March of 2008 when gold breached U.S. $1,000 an ounce. Europe, like all the rest of the world, has taken a bath on its U.S. dollar holdings. But that fades into insignificance when the increased value of the 27-member European Union gold holdings are taken into account. In March of this year, they had soared from $250, that's $250 an ounce in 2001, to $1,000 an ounce in 2008. So at present, these gold holdings are worth just under $900 an ounce. Now, the central point here is that for the United States to wage any kind of successful war on gold in the sense of forcing gold down in price against the U.S. dollar, all of the continental Europeans will have to go along with an enormous fall in the value of their own gold holdings to humor the United States. Do you believe that that's going to happen? Not only won't that happen, something else, though, has already happened. Our Federal Reserve Chief Bernanke has forced at a central bankers' meeting in Portugal, or he was forced, rather, at this meeting in Portugal to state that he, too, was now in favor of a strong U.S. dollar, where previously it was only the U.S. Treasury which made comments about the international U.S. dollar value, echoing the Treasury Secretary and his predecessors, who have been saying this throughout the U.S. dollar's fall. So in case you missed this, the U.S. dollar reached its peak in July of 2001 at 121. Today it's at 71. 81, 91, 101, 111, 121. It's dropped by 50 cents compared to the euro. It's dropped by 50 cents. So, you know, people that are holding dollars are taking a bath and they want to get off that train. And the United States of America cannot let the Saudi Arabians, the Iranians, the Iraqis, or anybody else off that train, because the value of oil and the dollar... See, oil has taken the place of gold since 1971. And so now the Iranians are saying they want to go back to gold. They're tired of this dollar oil valuation. Boys and girls, that's bad news. I'm just here to tell you the Americans cannot sit still for that, and they're not going to. I don't think that the average Joe Sixpack American understands the connection between the dollar and oil any more than he understood the connection between the dollar and gold back in 1971. But let me tell you, I'm just here to report, this cannot stand. And you Iranians over there that think that you're going to ditch the dollar in favor of gold, listen to President Bush. This cannot stand. Now, you tell me that that's not bad news. I tell you, I was so damn depressed when I read this issue of the privateer. I stayed in the house the whole day. Boys and girls, this has repercussions that most of us have never seen in our lifetimes. we've never heard of. The cover story that we're being fed over here is that the Iranians are building nuclear weapons. Boys and girls, that's the last thing on the agenda. Last thing on the agenda. If the Iranians will back off of this gold crap, get off of this dollar ditching move, they can sit over there and build nuclear weapons until the cows come home. That's not going to pose a problem. But I'm here to report to you that they ain't going to get away with this gold thing. That ain't going to stand. Now, from the point of view of us Americans over here that can't whip a bunch of camel jockeys out in Iraq and Afghanistan to go over here and stick your finger in the nose of these Iranians over here and take on a third one, as drunk as we are, it's got to be the closest thing to national suicide that's ever been breached or broached in the history of mankind. We are bankrupt, we can't pay our bills, and we're going to go to war against the Iranians. I can't think of worse news. Now, you know, again, you know, the bottom line to this is if there's an intelligent choice to be made and an insane choice to be made by government, you can rest assured that the governments will always make that insane choice. And so I'm sitting here getting ready for this war. And God only knows where the price of oil is going to go. And for Americans, let me tell you that there's going to be an embargo on oil, and half our oil comes from imports. Now, fortunately for us, we've got our brothers up in Canada. Now, for you Canadians up there, I cannot for the life of me understand why you want to sell us oil for worthless paper. And I got to apologize to all you Canadians up there. Let me tell you that from the point of view of myself and my family, let me apologize for our theft of your oil up there. Because you're not going to get paid. You have not been paid. You are not now being paid. And you are not going to be paid in the future. And we are going to come up there to Alberta and take that oil away from you by force of arms if you shut it off. That's the other side of the coin. So if you Canadians think this is good news, I got news for you. You people up there are going to be one bunch of sad puppies. Now, to say that that's insane, I've got to concede, that is absolutely preposterous and insane, but you know, when crisis comes, people act irrationally. Can you point, boys and girls, to any crisis in the history of the world when human beings acted rationally, sanely, and intelligently in the face of that crisis? By God, I'm here to tell you now, we got a crisis on our hands of unprecedented, unparalleled proportions. The last finger in the dike is the stock markets, and hell, now the Royal Bank of Scotland and Morgan Stanley say, okay, boys and girls, get ready for this one. It's coming next. The last hole in the dike, right there. Now, couldn't happen at a worse time. I mean, if this thing would have held off until we'd have gotten somebody in office beside George Bush, who's already demonstrated himself to be totally insane, maybe the next guy in line over here might have handled this a little bit differently, but this guy's going to act about like Mugabe, I think. Mugabe, that's that guy that's running Rhodesia. They call it Zimbabwe now. He just kind of suspended elections and appointed himself president for life. Those people down there starve without international aid. These are the same people now, 25, 28 years ago, said, hey, we want you white men out of here. Well, okay, now the white man left Zimbabwe. Okay, now what do you got? If it wasn't for the white men, you Zimbabweans down there would already be dead. We're the ones that are feeding you. So if you were leaving it up to me, I wouldn't feed them. But then, you know, it ain't up to me. So, I mean, if you want to feed those people, get after it. But I'm here to tell you that you're going to have a hard time feeding yourselves here in the United States of America. So now the rest of you people around the world, you know how to start taking some notes here. You know, you Canadians, you need a 4-year supply of food. Get after it. You Australians, get 4 years stashed away right now. If you're living in South Korea or Japan, Brazil, I don't care where you're at, make sure that you've got food, clothing, and shelter for the next 4 years and get it secured, because you're going to need it. And 4 years might not be enough. The Bible gives us an example. Back in the days of Joseph in Egypt, it was a 7-year famine. It was a 7-year crisis. They needed 7 years to do it. And I don't know, but what this one's going to be as bad as or worse than, I'm just here to tell you that I don't think 3 days is going to hack it. And Americans have 7% of us now. 7% of us are prepared for a crisis for 3 days. God. Listen, you know, if you don't eat for 3 days here, children, that's a nuisance. That's not a catastrophe. It's when you don't eat for 6 weeks that you've got a catastrophe on your hands. And that's what's coming. And God help anybody that gets in the way of the United States of America, because we've got our hands on the fingers of nuclear weapons. If you're a Russian, I would be sitting there trembling. If I was a Chinaman, I would be sitting there trembling. God only knows what's going to happen next. I don't. You know, I'm just sitting here on the sidelines like everybody else as a reporter. Now listen to this. There's a little bit more here. The rest of the world's holdings of U.S. financial assets have expanded by about $1.4 trillion over the past year to reach U.S. $15.5 trillion. So we Americans have written up IOUs for $15.5 trillion. Over the past year, we just added another $1.4 trillion to that. Now, if you people out there in Radio Land think you're going to get paid, you know, you got your head up your proverbial hind end. You're not going to get paid, you Canadians. You Australians, you ain't getting anything out of us. We haven't got it to give. All we can do is pass out more worthless paper. And out of that enormous sum, countries in Asia have piled up an amazing $4 trillion in foreign exchange reserves since the 1998 financial crisis as a means of protecting their economies from another regional currency slump. The problem in Asia is that none of these nations has stood with the gold reserves required to protect themselves against falls in the international value of the U.S. dollar. The U.S. huge problem here is that were any of these Asian nations to go into gold to add to their official reserves, gold would soar worldwide. So the dilemma here is, if these people start unloading their dollar reserves, it'll force prices up in any area where they go to spend the money. If the Chinese take their $4 trillion and the Japanese and the South Koreans and they go out and start buying copper, the price of copper will go up. If they go out and they start buying gold, then the price of gold is going to go up. And these people are sitting there on $4 trillion worth of worthless paper. So if I was Chinese or Japanese and I'm sitting here, listen, boys and girls, this is monumental. You people have never faced anything like this before. You're just about to get wiped out with us. When America goes down, all the rest of you are going down with us. And if you don't think that's going to cause a bunch of dislocations, I mean, you haven't been paying attention to your history teacher. This is a nightmare scenario. The specter facing U.S. monetary authorities is that the cause of any global gold surge would be current U.S. dollar holdings being used to buy the gold. That would cause a crash in the U.S. dollar against gold. When that settles down around the world, gold, not the U.S. dollar, would be the new center of monetary expression. Hey, that ain't going to happen. The United States ain't going to sit still and let that happen. We can't. You know, here again, geostrategically around the world, you know, where we have bases, and I think it's 137 countries around the world, where we have a military presence, we can't let that happen. And so now the Iranians have just thrown down the gauntlet. Now, the gauntlet was thrown down on June 9th. June 9th. That was Monday, June 9th. The Iranians stuck their finger right up in George Bush's nose and said, watch this, what are you going to do about it? Now, if that isn't bad news, I don't know what is. About the worst news that I can think of. Now, in talking about the banks here, U.S. banks have suffered $390 billion of losses and write-downs from mortgage-related securities since the start of 2007. According to the data compiled by Bloomberg, U.S. banks would lose another $300 billion on real estate loans during the upcoming year. Such losses could jeopardize balance sheets because the U.S. banking system only had $1,350 billion of equity capital as of April 1st this year. So let's put this into perspective here. On April 1st, U.S. banks had $1,350 billion. That's a trillion, $350 billion. And they're about to take a bath on another $300 billion. Now, that's what they're admitting to, which is going to leave them with about $1,000 billion of liquidity. Boys and girls, I just reported to you about 2 minutes ago that we got $15 trillion worth of these liabilities sitting out here all over the world. And that's the tip of the iceberg. This $15 trillion, this doesn't cover all of our liabilities. Our liabilities here in the United States, boys and girls, total $49 trillion. If you don't count derivatives, leave the derivatives out, because that's another $600 trillion. That's trillion with a T. That's the derivatives market. That thing's going to implode. Not just yet. That's not on the horizon yet. But the dollar is. And so, as I said, here's the bad news. Now, this is the bad news that you need to get prepared for. Now, if you're prepared for it, well, okay. That's about the best you can do. If you're not prepared for it, I can assure you that if you went balls out today to prepare for this, you would not get the job done. But you ought to start thinking about, you know, some elementary moves that need to be made to solidify your position wherever you're at over the short term. That's the next 90 to 180 days. Between now and Inauguration Day, if there's an inauguration on January 20th, 2009, there's going to be some very momentous events. And if you don't think war is coming with Iran, well, okay, you know, it's fine by me. But when that war with Iran starts up, kids, we may be facing Armageddon here. I have no idea what the Russians and the Chinese are going to do, but I find it hard to believe that they're going to sit by idly and do nothing. Now, I'm out of time again. I've got to remind you that you are listening to the Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 112 countries daily over the Internet and radio. Now, for more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law School is a private, non-profit, non-commercial, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact discs, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly and has our radio log schedule and archives, and that can be accessed to the website at georgegordon.org. Remember, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Hey, time's up. We've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.